I'm Brian Ellison, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. It's been a month since Kansas City's newest city council members were sworn in, a month riddled with gun violence in the city. Councils acted swiftly, passing two ordinances aimed to keep guns out of the hands of minors. There's still more to be done. Today, three freshman city council members share their impressions of the job. We'll ask what they want to hone in on while at City Hall, and their ideas for tackling the many issues facing the city and its residents. Then, it's finally Friday, and for many of us, it's the start of a long weekend, so in honor of Labor Day, we turn to libation expert Doug Frost for drink suggestions to help celebrate your hard work. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Today marks 1 month in office for the new leaders of Kansas City. Mayor Quentin Lucas was sworn in on August 1st, but so too was the entire city council, half of which, six council members, took their seats for the first time. Today we're talking with three of those rookie council members about what their month in City Hall has taught them so far and what their hopes are for the coming months, especially when it comes to some of the tough issues facing the city, including gun violence, the city's homicide problem, the new airport, and more. Joining us are Councilwoman Andrea Boo, who represents the 6th District at large. Andrea, Councilwoman Boo, welcome.
Thank you, Brian.
Melissa Robinson is the 3rd District in-district Councilmember Robinson, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You can tell I usually cover the legislature there. And Councilman Kevin O'Neill represents the 1st District at large. Welcome to you, sir.
Thank you. It's exciting to be a freshman again.
Yes, everyone enjoys those times. You know, in theory, what you're doing is not a full-time job. I am curious whether that has actually proven to be true for you. How much of this of your time is this taking?
Well, it's kind of like having two full-time jobs now.
Right. You still have your other job.
I still have my other job. So, but it's a lot different and it's a lot fun. I mean, I think everybody, especially the freshmen here, we're having a blast. We're learning. And right now, that's the most important part of our job is trying to figure it out. So it's been exciting.
Melissa Robinson, you're the president of the Black Healthcare Coalition. That's a job that you're continuing to do while you're serving on the council, right?
Yes, absolutely. And a full-time mom. So
Three full-time jobs.
But it has definitely test your mettle, but you learn to pace yourself and be engaged in all three spots. But it definitely has been a great opportunity to learn, to serve, and to figure out how to best apply people's vision to the council.
Andrea Boo, I know you were not a stranger to the government and the politics of the city even before serving on the council, but how has it been different to step into this role?
You know, Brian, I think it's different in that, especially as a lawyer, and what I do on one of my full-time jobs, which is not full-time anymore, you learn how to be an advocate for your client. And when you step in the role of a city council member, it puts you in a position of listening to all sides and making a decision based upon what's good for the city as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so while you want to advocate for a position, it really, you have to look at what is good for the city as a whole and make a decision based upon that.
Kevin O'Neill, you ran unopposed, unlike your colleagues here, and so you probably didn't get to talk as much about your background during the campaign as they did. You weren't in some of those conversations. Remind folks what you do and how different your work on the council is.
It's been great. I mean, it's been really interesting. I've spent the last 28 years owning a labor newspaper called the Labor Beacon, and I have about 30,000 subscribers that are all union members. So I've always had a very subjective look at things. The council offers a new perspective that you have to take, and to Andrea's point, you have to listen to a lot of stories and a lot of sides of issues, and your challenge is to figure out which one is the right one or the one that you believe in most, because you have a lot of really good salespeople out there that are selling you on their vision.
Right. I'm curious about kind of your first impressions of how well the mechanics of city government are working right now. And of course, you're an entirely new council. Every 4 years, it's an entirely new council, even if some of the members are continuing from the last one. But to your observation, how well does Kansas City work right now, based on your month of observing it? Melissa Robinson?
Well, definitely the term information flow definitely has a whole new view in terms of how information happens. It's very fast, it's quick, and you really have to keep your head on the swivel to keep engaged and be able to make the right decisions, because information is happening from 13 different places, including the administrative body as well. So. Mm-hmm.
What have your impressions been, Andrea Boo?
Well, I think there are departments in the city that operate, and we have some great employees in the city, and they make the city run. You know, we sit down in our committees, and there are grants that the city receives, and we sit down to approve them. And there are certain processes in the city that are going to continue to run, no matter that a new council has been sworn in on August 1st.
Right.
And then I think there's a process of a new council coming in and learning how the process of governing works. And it does take some time. And we are learning that, you know, the committee meetings is where a lot of the discussion occurs, where the legislative session, you know, we do not take testimony. We generally, although that may not necessarily be the case recently, there's not a lot of discussion. But unfortunately, that's where all of the council is together in legislative session,
right,
not in the committee.
The real work happens in committees, and yet you're all together at the council.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So learning how the process and how we get together and make decisions, I think, is something that we're still working on.
Yeah.
I want to invite our listeners into this conversation and ask, what are your questions for these three new members of the city council? You can give us a call at 816-235-2888. What issues are on your mind? What is important to you that you think should be important to them? Give us a call, 816-235-2888. We're also on Twitter at KCUR Up to Date. Let me start with one issue that is on a lot of people's minds right now, and that's gun violence. This has not been a gentle ramp up to hard work for you on the council. You've found some pretty urgent issues on your desk, including the fact that the city has had its 100th homicide of the year this week, puts us on pace for one of the most violent in recent memory. Yesterday, all of you voted for two ordinances designed to keep guns out of the hands of minors, and those passed without opposition. Kevin O'Neill, is that enough?
No. I mean, violence is something we all care about, and we want to try to restrict it. And our hands are tied a lot from state legislature, especially with guns. I hope that we can all have a discussion, because I think everybody comes at it from a different perspective and in a different view. And I want to hear everybody's perspective on this, because we're going to face this for the next 4 years. And if we're lucky or unlucky enough to survey, this will be a problem for a long time.
Yeah, I think it'll still be an issue. It's been an issue for a long time. Melissa Robinson, are you satisfied that the council's on the right track and to address it?
I think that there's a lot more that we can do from the municipal vein. Yes, gun control is one issue, but also when you think about what's happening at the health department and the family master plan, during former Mayor Kay Barnes' era, she commissioned a group of folks to address crime and violence. And part of the recommendation was a family master plan, in which is in the publishing stages now. So you see how long these things take.
Remind us what that is. What
basically,
is a family master
plan? Basically, we know how we handle conflict happens at the family level, happens very early. So we need more early interventions. And to the degree in which we can support families will be to the degree in which we can help curb crime from a long-term perspective, and then also early intervention. So this is where, how do we all get on the same page as service providers, social service providers, and making sure that we're fully supporting families and having that early intervention. The other thing is, we're in a state of emergency as it relates to crime and violence. And so we need to think about safe passage, especially for our kids that are walking to school every day. There's going to be a safe routes to school conference here in the region. region in Overland Park. I think it's in the next couple of weeks. But we have to think about in our cities where the crime is happening most, a lot of our children are now scared to walk to school. So we're working on how do we develop a guardian program or something to help curb some of the anxiety and fear that people have.
How are we working on it, though? That's an idea people have. What's actually being done in the city right now to create a safer walk to school for kids?
We are starting those conversations. There's a lot of community organizations that are leaders and community activists that can put this together. We have to be able to support it. So I'm in early conversations with the police department to see how we can have a guardian program, identify safe routes to school as it relates to our neighborhood schools, because again, people are in constant fear in the neighborhoods that I represent and where I live.
Andrea Boo, you heard Kevin O'Neill say, you know, obviously there's things that the state needs to do. How much of this can really be solved at the city level? What do you want to see happen?
Well, I think it needs to be solved at every level. It is a state problem. It is a city problem. It is a community problem. It is a family problem. And just because it's not a mutually exclusive issue to say it's a public safety problem and it's a public health problem. And we need to bring all of those community organizations, faith-based organizations, schools, business leaders together. And I think that is what the master plan is doing, is to bringing all of those organizations and community leaders together to address these issues and say it is not mutually exclusive to address this issue from a public safety aspect. And what we can address at the city as well as we can address in the community as a public health issue.
Yeah, I'm struck by the ordinances that passed yesterday. They're pretty modest steps. They're kind of reinforcements of existing federal law that allows guns to not be in the hands of minors, a $200 fine. I wonder, are there other legislative solutions, which is what's sort of within your power immediately as a council member, that you can imagine having a real impact? Is there an ordinance that you would sponsor right now, today, to confront gun violence in Kansas City? I'm seeing a lot of looking at each other.
I can only, for instance, the police chief came up with the NOVA, reinstituting the NOVA program.
Right. So this is from back in 2013, the No Violence Alliance, which was very effective for a time.
And the problem was, they went after groups of violent offenders. And he's change that now that they're going to go against individuals. And it all sounds great, but the problem we had in the first go around was the courts weren't involved. The courts didn't agree with the final concept, which was putting people in jail for minor offenses that were criminal. And so until that really gets changed, I don't know if it can be as effective as it is without the courts.
Yeah, there was a criminologist this week who said that the violence in a city is like the flu. It evolves, and you have to keep coming up with new immunizations against it.
Wow.
Absolutely. And one of the things I am very interested in doing and would pass today is continuing to fund and doubling down on our community policing efforts in a way that we have an equitable share of community police officers. Right now, there are an equal share, and we need community policing to have relationships with a lot of the groups that are having the conflict, and developing relationships with residents so that they feel more comfortable in having conversations about what's happening in their community. So from our lane, we fund the police department, and I know that it takes up a lot of our budget, but I would think about how do we provide a precision approach for efforts that have proved to work, which community policing is a model that's done that.
Fund the police department, but don't actually have local control of the police department.
Well, we can talk about that too.
Andrea Boo.
Well, and I think, that is addressing it from, again, the public safety aspect. But I think as Councilwoman Robinson has put forward a resolution to start off our term in looking at issues of racial equity. And we can also propose ordinances and resolutions that look at other issues like living wage, mental health, affordable housing. And that can address some of the root causes of violence. So there are other things that we can do to address not only the public side of it.
I think that hopelessness is a huge factor.
Right.
And if you can create hope in people, they will.
Well, and especially when they see so much prosperity around them and not in their communities.
No question.
Because
Absolutely.
Kansas City has grown in very beautiful ways in certain pockets of our community. And they're directly adjacent to the neighborhoods in which have the blight and the crime. And so we need to think about shared prosperity and equity in all policies, I think, would be another step.
We in fact have a call about that at 816-235-2888. This is Leah in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Leah.
Hi.
You had a question for our new council members.
I did. I mean, and it parlays so much into what they're already talking about, but I live in downtown Kansas City, and the homeless issue has become a pretty prolific problem over the past couple of years. And I have gone to meetings before with past city council people where they, you know, say they're trying to address it or have created an organization and given them money to try to do something about it, and it doesn't really feel like we're making any headway.
Okay, I appreciate your question. I want to make sure we get to all of our questions, so thank you, Leah.
Okay.
Question about homelessness in the city. How can that be effectively addressed? Congresswoman, I keep promoting you. Councilmember Robinson.
Well, again, we have to address the root causes of what's happening. There's a lot of conversation about the migrant nature of homelessness as well, in terms of where folks are coming from, how they arrive to this place, and how are we taking care of them once they come here. And when I say that, I mean people that are moving from places like Smithville, not like so that are coming here to Kansas City. And in some instances, there's been conversations of busloads of them coming because Kansas City is a more a friendly city for homelessness individuals. And so we have to address really the root causes of what's happening. Obviously, having short-term solutions, emergent solutions, and having shelters and those types of things. But we have to address some of the root causes, which, you know, mental health plays a role into that and others.
Which we've mentioned is indeed already. Right. Are there any?
I think the CIDs that they have, the community
improvement districts.
No, not the CIDs, the CIOs, the community involvement officers, I think is what. But the chief instituted where each patrol now has two CIOs, and they go out into the community and they really talk to a lot of the homeless, and they find out, because there is a kind of a dual-edged sword there. You've got homeless people, and then you've got scammers that sit on street corners, right? You know, collecting $400 a week, $500 a week, and there's a difference. And the homeless, I think the CIOs are able to notify the agencies where to go,
sure.
and so I think that helped. But I think to Melissa's point earlier, we need more help on the ground.
Let's take one more call from Nicole in Kansas City. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
You had a question for our new council members.
Yes. Yesterday, the council voted to move the operation of animal control to KCPP. My question is...
the Kansas City Pet Project.
Yes. The council, have they looked at what the contract amount is going to be, and how do we as taxpayers follow that through the process, since it looks like it's going to be a no-bid contract?
Thanks, Nicole. It's a question about animal control and the KC Pet Project.
And both Kevin and I serve on the committee, and so Kevin may remember the dollar figure. It was over $1 million,
$2 million.
And that it wasn't a no-bid contract. They did put out an RFP, and there were two companies that actually applied, and the committee that was reviewing the contract rejected both of those proposals. And so what you can do to follow that is there's going to be an ordinance that's going to be coming up when the contract is negotiated that will have the definite amount of that contract. So it would be important for you to stay tuned to the city clerk's website, sign up for those announcements about the TINO CFO committee that is, I'm sorry, it's going to be the finance committee that will actually review the ordinance. And so staying in connection with that.
I want to hit a couple of other topics before we go. I mean, certainly one that you've had to talk a lot about during the campaign and now is the new airport. Councilwoman Robinson and Councilman O'Neill, you both serve on that Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. There were concerns this week about the small percentage of the work hours performed on the new terminal so far being done by residents of Kansas City. Are you concerned about that? I see you nodding your head.
Yes. I've been worried about this from the very beginning. This is a game-changing project for Kansas City. The trades that are involved in this are slowly aging, and we have to have lots of new people getting into the trades. And this should be the transformative job that changes the minority participation. And I don't know if Edgemoor is doing enough. But I can tell you we're going to be very involved in making sure they do.
Still early in the process.
Right? Which connects right directly to our crime issue, right, which Councilwoman Boo brought up. We want to make sure that 100% of the young people in our system, they have access to a lot of these jobs, and they're being prepped and primed for these really great jobs if they want to go into construction. This is an opportunity for us to allow people to get into the middle class.
You know, another issue that has come up a lot in the past year or two on the council are these economic incentives for developers that the city offers. Many think that too much is offered to developers, especially downtown, at the expense of the city's less prosperous neighborhoods. Soon you will all have the opportunity to vote on another tens of millions of dollars in incentives for the proposed downtown office tower. Let me ask each of you, would you support that?
At this point, I am a no for the office project because, again, I think that we have to, as a council, really talk about what our priorities in our community. If housing is a priority, then we need to incent developers to address the problems and needs of the city. And then we have to have a conversation about when will the downtown area be sustainable in which it can attract development that does not need public incentive. Now, however, we also have to talk about the legal liability as well, because there were promises made to developers. And so this is a two-edged sword that we have to look at all sides.
The new council is sometimes in a difficult position if commitments have already been made.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I agree with Melissa. Or Councilman Robinson.
The lawyer
always tells me I got to so these are past promises, and the Strata project, it's one of those that we've got to make a decision as a council. Do we uphold the promises that are supposed to come down in the future, or do we decide not to uphold those, which would change probably our direction on what we do with the new project, with the new building?
I wish we had more time, but unfortunately, we are out of time. Councilwoman Andrea Boo, Councilwoman Melissa Robinson, and Councilman Kevin O'Neill, three of the new members of the Kansas City Council, 1 month into their new jobs. Thank you all for being with us.
Thank you, Brian.
When we come back, as you make your final plans for Labor Day weekend cookouts and picnics, do you know what you'll be pulling out of the cooler or the wine cellar for your guests? Our resident virtuoso of vino, Doug Frost, is here, and you should be too when KCUR's Up-to-Date returns. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR 89.3. And welcome back to Up-to-Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. Steve's got a new weekly newsletter. You can sign up for it at kcur.org/Kraske. It's great news for anyone looking for a little something extra from Steve and the Up-to-Date team. Sign up for exclusive weekly insights and extras at kcur.org/Kraske. Monday is Labor Day, which means our crew will be taking the day off, but tune into KCUR 89.3 for an education documentary on why schools continue to ignore the science of effective reading instruction. That's Monday at 11 on KCUR, and I'll be back here with you on Tuesday. But today, we are getting ready to celebrate the holiday weekend, and maybe there's one last trip to the store required, the meat that you'll grill, the cabbage you'll shred, the mayonnaise you'll try not to leave out in the sun, but the most important thing for many is the libations that you'll pour. There they are. You're on your own for the food. But as you've come to expect, Doug Frost is here to help us with those drinks. He's a master sommelier and master of wine, and he's pretty expert in other potent and non-potent potables as well. Doug Frost, welcome back to Up to Date.
Thank you. Always nice to be here.
It's excellent to have you here. And as our listeners can hear, you're going to give us some opportunities to sample your work. Doug, what does Labor Day weekend mean to you?
Well, it is for us, certainly, you know, we're pretty classic. We like to get together, grill a bunch of stuff, have people over, and the weather be damned. You know, we don't care. We're grilling no matter what it looks like.
If you have to move inside to eat, you can still do that.
We will do that, but the grill still works even under the tree, you know, in the rain. So, but we like different things, and yeah, wine is certainly my my main thing and all that. But I like cocktails. I like beer. This is a little tart apple radler from Boulevard. You know, our friends over at Boulevard continue to make some really cool stuff, and radler has been my most common beer style drink for years now. Really, I just like the lower alcohol.
Yeah, I feel like Radler wasn't ever really in the national consciousness until the last few years. Stiegl Radler was one
Absolutely.
That everybody
I love
knew
that
about.
Stuff. Yeah,
grapefruit juice in there. But this is different. What is this specifically?
Yeah, so Boulevard has done obviously their ginger lemon Radler, and that's pretty groovy too. And I just thought the tart apple would be fun to show. It's quite different in the sense that apple isn't usually. You know, apple juices, this also has lemon to it as well. Mm-hmm. And usually we'd consider that a shandy. I think still we kind of utilize different nomenclature, perhaps incorrectly, but nonetheless.
Radler sounds a little more sophisticated than
it
shandy.
It does, and it tastes really good too, you know.
Well, joining us in the studio today to help us evaluate Radler, shandy, or whatever else comes along, we have KCUR's live event producer, Chris Young. Chris, welcome.
Good morning, Brian.
And Chris has a little bartending in his background, so he knows
just a little bit.
Knows a little what he's talking about. And of course, KCUR's Up to Date senior producer Danny Alexander has stepped out of the booth and in front of the microphone. Hi, Danny.
I do it for you.
Well, and it's good of you to make these sacrifices. So Doug Frost. Often families get together on these Labor Day weekends, and one of the things that we discover in the spirit of family friendliness is that not everyone at the table is drinking alcohol. I know that you have good options for them as well.
Yeah, I think it's really important to not just, I mean, nothing against Perrier and Pellegrino, you know, but there are other things to do as well. So, you know, I brought along a little strawberry syrup. Actually, it's a drink that Restaurant 1900 does called the Athletic Club, which is sort of a generic kind of name. I'll bang that up with some ice here in a second, but it's important, I think, to just try to make a few different things. This is just strawberry syrup, basically, and a couple of other ingredients. It's you know, easy to make, interesting fruit juice based drinks. A lot of people have soda at hand. You know, throw some soda water in there. It's just fun to try different things. It doesn't have to be alcohol beverage. And for all of us, I think, who are in the business, we've learned a long time ago to have a drink that doesn't have alcohol in it, so we can lengthen our evenings.
Yeah, right. And of course, even for those who can drink alcohol, sometimes they might choose to drink lower alcohol content, like this Radler that you've provided for us. And I guess I'm curious, Chris Young, what do you think?
Oh, I love it. I think Radler's, as has been said, it's a fantastic low ABV option. And Doug, correct me, but my understanding is Radler is a German style of beer.
Yes.
And traditionally, it was cut with a citrus soda or lemonade. And the idea was, in a biking heavy culture, you would drink something low ABV that was cut with something a little hydrating, kind of allow you to
keep
going.
Low alcohol content.
Yes, ABV, sorry, a low alcohol by volume. And that's why Radlers are great. You can drink a little bit. You're not, you know, getting wasted. They're usually around like 3-4%.
Yeah, this is four, just over four. Yeah.
And with the Boulevard one specifically, I love the tart apple, especially now that fall's coming up. We really want those like kind of fall fruits, the stone fruits, apples and pears especially. And it's just a really lovely, it has a nice tartness and roundness to it.
It does. So what do you think, Danny?
Well, I don't have bartending experience, but I do have
tasting experience. Yes.
And I was introduced to Radler's at the Independence has a walk every summer. And I ran into Boulevard's Lemon Ginger. And absolutely. And I'm not a huge beer drinker, but I do like in the summers. And this is what has made me enjoy beer more, are these types of lighter with that sharpness, that little refreshment to it with the citrus notes. And this is another one that's a winner as far as I'm concerned.
I have to admit that I'm not usually a cider fan, but I can see myself drinking this apple Radler when my friends are drinking cider, Doug.
Yeah, it's basically wheat beer with apple and lemon. But now we are jumping into real live cider, and this is actually French cider, but it's what we call a Perry, a Poire de Normandie. So this is a pear juice, 100% pear. It's three different pears. It's from a family called the Cayoul, known as Domaine Sicara. And
there's a very particular note I'm hitting here. What is it? I always do this to you. I can taste it, but I can't describe it.
This I have trouble with as well. It seems a bit like cardamom. There are some really interesting.
I mean, say the name again for this. That was pretty fast in French.
It's Poire de Normandie, so okay. Pear of Normandy.
And you're pouring it out of what looks like a wine bottle.
Yes, and this I would treat this as like a wine. It's only 3.7% alcohol, so it is something again that can kind of stretch your afternoon. But pear and apple ciders are serious business in France, in Spain, in England, even in the Scandinavian countries as well. And I think these are really, really serious drinks. I find them dry and complex and wild and sort of and Danny, back
I like
to you.
It. No, but you
I don't know
I
what
tend
that
to,
is either.
I tend to like a little bit of funk in mm-hmm. my bottle sometimes. Mm-hmm. That's why I like Norton so well.
a little bit of funk.
Mm-hmm. This in a very good way. And this is like you said, it's got a spice note underneath it that mm-hmm. is very, very nice. Almost toward a pine. Almost,
interesting.
You know?
I can see that. And it also just have a lovely mouthfeel. The mm-hmm. head on it, it's like kind of creamy and foamy. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a meringue. And I don't taste that typically with ciders, which is really interesting. And I think it's a really expands kind right. of another dimension of it.
Which we should say, it looks like a sparkling wine. When you started pouring it,
yes.
Doug, I thought you were pouring champagne for
yes,
us.
Yes, exactly. And pear has a different sugar in it than apples do. So it does have a different flavor, and it does come up with a different texture, I think, as a result of that. But I just, as many pears and apple ciders as are in the stores these days, I have to be somewhat uncomplimentary of many of them. Most mm-hmm. of them are just sugary sweet cocktails. And, you know, in the words of Seinfeld, not that there's anything wrong with it, but to me, that's not what I'm looking for. I like these complex drinks. And I think the next time you go to a store and you ask for a cider or you ask for a Perry, ask for what they have that comes from a different country, frankly. Mm-hmm. There are some really good ones here in the U.S. Ace, I think, is kind of a name that comes to mind quickly. But in general, I think it's the French and the Spanish and the English who are taking these categories super seriously and make very complex drinks.
How much does a bottle of this particular variety
pair of
run
Normandy
you?
Pair of Normandy.
Yeah, it's about $15, okay. A little less than $15. So
like a good a decent grocery store bottle of wine.
Yeah, it is. It's a 750 mil, so there's plenty there.
So, you know, a lot of people Labor Day, you know, invokes cider, but for you, Doug Frost, I think many would say that every season invokes every kind of alcoholic beverage for you.
I do believe that that's an appropriate response to good living, to good food, to hanging out with your friends and family, for sure. I think it's okay to have a drink. So I brought along a couple of white wines that will probably appear on my dining room table here if I don't lose them on the way home. Augusta Winery's Vidal Blanc. Vidal Blanc is a grape that is specifically successful, I think, here in the Midwest. Mm. And it's a grape that you will never find any place other than the Midwest, or at least for the time being, although there's some in the Northeast as well. But it's a grape that has a bit of a pear, a bit of a apple character of its own, a little bit of lemon, sometimes even a note of peach or something like that.
One of the things I really appreciate about you, Doug, is that you have never been snooty about local Missouri area wines. You think local wines have a lot to offer us that people sell them short.
I absolutely do. The idea that they're all sweet and they're all, you know, just, you know, junk wine is absolutely wrong. Maybe that was true 40 years ago. And, mm-hmm. And I've been following the industry for 40 years. Maybe that was true 35 and 30 years ago. But over the last three decades, slowly it has become a serious business. And this particular wine, I've participated in wine competitions in California with thousands of wines and dozens of judges. And this wine, this grape, has sometimes won top white wine of the show. So it's time for people to take the wine seriously. You know, if you don't like it, fine. Don't worry about it. But I think these wines are worthy
but
of our
attention.
Don't
dismiss it as not possibly a good wine. Chris Young, what do you think of this white that we're
well,
enjoying?
I think it's hitting a lot of those kind of fall fruit notes really subtly. But I like that. I am getting definitely the pear, a little bit of crisp from the apple and the lemon. And I think they're all kind of in there, but it's very subtle. You know, I wouldn't want to say muted flavors. Full disclosure, wine is not my forte. I do enjoy drinking it, though. So
mm-hmm. This is the Vidal Blanc, once again, from Augusta Brewery, Augusta Winery. And where is that again, Doug?
Well, it's over in Augusta, so closer to the St. Louis side of the state.
Okay.
And beautiful rolling hills there with a mm-hmm. sort of French heritage of wine growing, as opposed to Hermann, not too far away, which has that German heritage.
Moving into wine, we're into Danny's sweet spot. Danny, what do you think of this wine?
I would say this is kind of, and I'm going to make a music analogy here, it's kind of like when you listen to a song the first time and you almost want to go, eh, but you want to give it a second listen. Because, as Chris said, these notes are subtle. You may miss them the first time around, or if that first sip, so always, you know, if you're just out to drink a glass of wine, it's great. But if you really want to appreciate it, you might want to take just a wee bit more.
I will say I can envision drinking this wine in on a long, long, warm afternoon, sitting on the porch, talking with friends.
I'm just thinking of the deck,
absolutely, yeah.
It's a good summer Sunday afternoon wine, I think. Doug, you've poured another white wine there.
We ain't messing around here. We have Albarino. Albarino, once upon a time, Albarino was kind of a niche wine at best. And the Spanish producers who have focused upon the grape quite wisely decided to focus on the U.S. and North American market as well. So now the U.S. drinks more Albarino than anyone in the world, including the Spanish.
Wow.
And this is Braganza. There's a bunch of Albarinos I love. I think my absolute favorite is probably Fiaboa, which not uncoincidentally is also made by a woman. There's a lot of female Spanish winemakers, surprisingly for people, but it's a field that women have been welcomed into there, and this is also made by a woman, and I think it's pretty classy.
If someone's never tasted Albarino, that they've done Sauvignon Blanc, they've done Chardonnay, they've hit the old favorites. How would you describe Albarino to them?
Classically, the world has described it as Riesling only dry. I'm not sure that that's as fair any longer. Instead, what I tell people is that depending upon where that Albarino is grown, the closer it is to the coast, the more it's citrus. The farther away it is from the coast, the more it's peach and sometimes even apricot.
Danny Alexander, what do you think?
I'm a big fan of Albarinos. I have been for a number of years now because it has great balance in it. If you don't want something that's overpowering, but you want something that still has some character, this is the wine I recommend.
And Chris Young?
I absolutely adore it. It's got a nice kind of balance like the last one. I'm getting some kind of dry and tartness in the finish.
And a little lighter note, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Doug, as you think about these different things you've brought out here today, an Albarino, the Vidal Blanc from Missouri, the pear cider that you've shared with us, think about the different foods people are serving on Labor Day weekend. Is there something that really pairs well, better with some things than others?
For sure. I think, of all things, a slightly sweet Riesling, I think, is wonderful with barbecue of any type, pork, beef, what have you. But when we're looking at these lighter white wines here, these typically will get overshadowed by the intensity of barbecue sauce. So I'm looking more at grilled chicken and grilled fish and things like that, mm-hmm. Which is what we're going to be doing this weekend. We're figuring out which salmon we're throwing these things at. And certainly I think all of these are perfectly pleasant as cocktails, as appetizers, as charcuterie accompaniments and that kind of thing. In fact, I always think charcuterie isn't a big enough tradition in the U.S. It's wonderful to have sliced and cured meats and cheeses and things like that at the outset, not mm-hmm. just at the end.
Yeah, and sometimes in between as well.
Yeah,
and wines like these, or drinks like these, I think cut through the fattiness that you'll often find, and I think it brings a nice balance to a meat cheese plate, or what Americans are so traditional on the grill, they tend to have those fatty, rich entrees, and I think these really do balance it really well.
Yeah, I mean, I still come back to the idea that just people should just drink what
they like.
You know, it doesn't really matter, quote-unquote, what's supposed to go with something. We do tend to play fair in the wine business and the restaurant business that I don't want the food to overwhelm the wine or the wine to overwhelm the food. But first and foremost, I just need people to like the damn thing they're drinking.
Right. I mean, I'm curious. Here we are not sampling a red wine today, but I guess we're allowed to talk about wines that we're not actually tasting on the air. But is there if people say, I don't know everything I like, but I know I like red wine, when you think about those barbecue sauce heavy meals, what red wine should they be pairing?
Well, you know, over the years, I have worked the restaurant floor many times, and I can't tell you the number of times that I'd have a four top, and whoever's ordering the wine would say, well, you know, I'm having the pork roast, and he's having the beef, and she's having the Dover sole, and she's having the shrimp scampi.
So what pairs with all?
Yeah, could you bring us
one bottle
for that? Yeah, and it's always like, I'll be right back with Syrah. I just feel like Syrah is it's a grape that in California has been particularly difficult to sell, and I think a lot of that is due to the ubiquity of Australian Shiraz, same grape, its success started to drag everybody else down because it became a sort of commodity kind of wine. I think it's a more serious grape than that, and I think at its best it can be utterly delicious. Pinot Noir is the same kind of thing, but it's harder to find good bargain Pinot Noir than it is to find good bargain Syrah. And first and foremost, I need to save some money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
I may need two bottles.
Right. I think most of us on Labor Day are not pulling out the multi-$100 bottles of
Yeah,
wine.
That's really true. It is supposed to be a little down home.
So I'm seeing a lot of preparations have been made in the last little while here. It's the joy of radio is that you don't get to see all the action here. Danny running in and out of the studio, filling things. And Chris Young is now pulling the rind off of a lemon with a beautiful copper lemon peeler.
Peeler, yeah.
But Doug Frost is the one who was shaking the cocktail mixer and is pouring a lustrous melon-colored beverage out into the glass. Doug, what am I looking at?
Again, all I'm dealing with here is a little bit of strawberry syrup, and I'm going to let Chris throw that on there, throw the lemon
on
there.
Well, it's like having a sea chef.
The oils all the way around that thing.
He just expressed the lemon peel over the drink.
And this is a compliment to Doug for getting out just a really good lemon. You want one that has really good pores, not too oily, not too flat, because you want to zest those oils on it. And as you garnish, around the base is best. You want the oils on your fingers, not necessarily on your palate, but you want it in your aroma. So,
and I will say that the real trick is not to get too much of the pith. When you take that lemon peel.
Correct.
Off,
Doug, have you ever had this much competition for cocktail preparations tasters?
I think it's awesome. I really do. And now we just need to throw a little mint leaf on there as well.
Properly bruised.
We really should be Facebook Living this conversation because slapped the mint leaf.
I gave it a light
I almost
spank.
Feel like I'm back at communion. One goblet we're going to share.
But again, slapping the mint leaf, you're getting those aromas
right,
going.
Bruising,
once it's on your aromatic palate, you're going to kind of get those flavors a little bit more on the
just
tongue.
The aroma. You almost don't want it's almost like those meals that show pretty when they come. You don't want to like eat it. I almost don't want to drink this, but I'm going in.
Yeah. Well, so this she mentioned communion. I'm a little familiar with communion and I support that wholeheartedly.
This would be a good thing at communion. So this is basically, as I say, it's about 2.5 ounces of strawberry syrup. So just strawberries cooked down and sweetened up, an ounce of lemon, an egg white, and then about 5 drops of rose water. And usually we'll throw the rose water on top. Charlie Hibbard, the bartender who banged this into a little bottle for me here, he would normally throw the rose water on top, so you would also get that aroma. But we had to go ahead and throw it inside, so it's in there.
That was simply amazing, actually. And that's
we're all doing the same. They're all going, oh,
it's sweet but not too sweet,
not
it's,
too much strawberry.
It's tart but not too tart. Mm-hmm. It is all there.
And there's no alcohol in it at all.
Yeah, so, it's wonderful though.
Go for it.
Not overly fruity, not overly sweet. And that's usually the two things I about non-alcoholic summit drinks that I don't care for. They're too sweet. They're too fruity. Sometimes they're too sticky. You know, they just stick.
Sure.
They cloy. But that is superb.
herb.
Yeah, I mean, none of this has to happen. To me, it's just if you want to be if you want to have fun when you have family and friends over, if you bring them something they haven't had before that tastes really good, everybody, it just changes the attitude a wee bit. Having said that, there's nothing like a little touch of alcohol to change the attitude.
Well, and I am thinking, what is the touch of alcohol in that particular drink that would make it a cocktail?
You know, it's funny. The Athletic Club as a drink, you see it based on tequila. You see it based on Irish whiskey. You see, various and sundry versions out there. So if I were playing around with this, I think I'd go to tequila. I think I might adjust the florals out of it a little bit and maybe play with some bitters. But Chris, do you got any crazy ideas?
I think tequila definitely, or maybe even mezcal. I think that the smoky flavor would play nicely with some of the sweet. And I mean, that speaks to the importance of garnishing a drink, because really just we added a little bit of vegetal note, a little bit of citric note, and it's almost just like adding salt and pepper to a meal. It just kind of garnishes what's already there and adds another dimension to it. But yeah, I would definitely go tequila or mezcal.
So thinking about that drink and sort of the broader constellation of non-alcoholic drinks that are available, we've come full circle to where we started the conversation. As people gather, Doug, what are the things that they should think about when they're thinking about putting together their own creative ways of serving beverages? Not everything you serve has to come right out of a bottle pre-made.
Yeah, for sure. It's okay to experiment a little bit, to take some fruits of the season, add some sugar so they taste nice and balanced, play around with soda water, the simplest ingredients, really. And
things you might have in your fridge or in your garden anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the garnish makes a big deal. It to me, always has a profound impact and adds to the sense that somebody has made this by hand. But I just would say that you don't have to have a million things there. If you just pick a few different things, a few different categories, maybe, as we've tried to do here. The main thing is, I think, finding out what your hosts like. My wife and I had some friends over just the other day, and I'm the geek that runs to the store and buys a bunch of freaky bottles of beer because I know there's a couple beer drinkers in there. And, you know, really all they wanted was the damn Rattler. It's like my bourbon barrel quad and my, you know, this rye this and rye that. They were like, yeah, can I have another Rattler? So.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what this host likes, everything you have brought, actually. Danny, you have
just
ideas?
Real quick, because I don't want to be spending my day, you know, making drinks for everybody. So if I want to set up a bar, what are some of the basic minimum things I should have on my bar so that my guests can make their own drinks?
I think you need fresh sodas, so tonics and soda water, but they need to be fresh. Tonic is terrible.
Right.
It's sweet. If it's
I remember
been
Chris's
open.
Warning. Yeah, if it comes out of the hose,
it's got awful that way.
You can't possibly put the cap on tight enough.
No, you can't. So you get the little bottles of tonic and hopefully some hard, dense ice. But aside from that, a couple of spirits are good enough for me. Having tequila, having gin, having vodka, and maybe one brown spirit like a whiskey or an aged rum is plenty enough. And then just a few fruit juices and bitters. Never forget bitters. A little bit of bitters takes a drink from interesting to fascinating.
Well, that is the virtuoso of vino, our savant of cider, and our bon vivant of beer as well today, Doug Frost. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Brian.
And thanks also to Danny Alexander and Chris Young for tasting with me.
Anytime.
Always
a pleasure.
So yesterday on the program, two members of the Missouri Legislative Black Caucus expressed frustration at the governor's refusal to address gun violence in an upcoming special session. You can hear that conversation and other previous episodes at kcur.org/up-to-date. We're taking Monday off for the Labor Day holiday, and we hope you can too. We'll be back on Tuesday. Our theme music is composed by the great Bobby Watson. We had help this week from Linda Scher, Ron Yerman, Maria Carter, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Elizabeth Ruiz. Steve Kraske was here too for part of the week. I'll be back Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everybody. You are up to date.